following episode contains language and descriptions of violence and self-harm. It may not be appropriate for all listeners, but it was my life. Discretion is advised.
This time I'm going to be a little less needy. Do my best to give instead of being greedy. Take a little time, take it all in. Take a deep breath, do it all again. Take a little drive in my pickup truck. Windows down and the feel good up, this time. When you're in the situation we were, man, that's what we thought about was this time. Hey, this time when I go home, I want to do this. This time I want to be a better person. This time I want to be a better father, a better husband. This might be your last time, this time. So use your this time for every fucking thing that it's worth. Fucking second you have, man, make it your this time. That's the way I live my life around that song.
I'm your host, Peter Meyerhoff, and you're listening to the Roll Call with Chappie podcast. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe, share, and follow us on social media. You can learn more about this episode and my mission at petermeyerhoff.com. All right, drop it. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Another episode of Roll Call with Chappie, and I have an extremely special guest today. Country music superstar, Josh Scott. Just won the iHeartRadio contest for Song of the Year. Thank you for being here.
Oh, first of all, thanks for having me, dude. I've been watching your show. I've been watching your story. And it's inspiring to see the comeback. And I watched the episode with you and your mom, your brother. I haven't got a chance to watch Sheriff Lamb yet, but I will. And I think what you're doing is absolutely fantastic, first of all, dude. So I'm glad that I can be here to be a part of what you got going on. And life's good, man. Life's good. I'm out here chasing my dreams and taking advantage of every opportunity that comes in front of me and not settling, you know, and just trying to make up for lost time and just do as much as I can every single day with the time I got.
I can definitely relate to not missing out for lost time. But I want to get into more of before the country music star. So how was Josh Scott growing up?
So growing up, I was, you know, great family, great everything. Didn't ever need for nothing. You know, I played basketball growing up in all sports. So I was really into sports and basically, you know, I thought I was going to grow up and be in the NBA, which is the kid, you know, you've got big dreams. So I played high school basketball. I got in and played some college ball. And then, you know, after you get into a certain level of playing sports, you realize, man, there's a whole bunch of good dudes around.
Really good dudes.
You know, like, so, you know, I got into, you know, figuring out that I wasn't going to be in the NBA and my basketball career had to end and then you got to go start real life. And so, you know, life was good, man. Life was good. I went and got a job after college and lived a normal life and, you know, did car sales and front end manager at Albertsons and you know, just being normal. And then I lost my dad to a wrongful death suit at the VA hospital.
Ouch.
And that's when I started using drugs. So, you know, wow. That turned me on to meth, you know. So I started using some meth and cocaine to get by, and it flipped my world upside down overnight.
And that's what's such a cool mixture, because it's kind of what I want to, the message I get here a lot of times too is people have this stereotype in their head of like who uses drugs and who these addicts are. And it's normal people, you know, that just deal with bad stuff in their life. And then sometimes we don't know how to handle it because we're not well equipped yet, you know? So we turn to something to numb the pain, you know, and clearly yours was drugs. Meth is what ruined my life. How bad did it get? And then I want to get into the prison because we both did a chunk of prison time. So how long did you use for and how bad did it get before the prison?
So my dad died in 2005. I think I was 27 years old. And, you know, my dad was my hero. My dad, 22-year Marine Corps veteran, about my height, 280 pounds. Never need him. Never heard him say I need or want anything. Never seen him ask for help. Never seen him with the cold. You know, just like just my dad, man, he's my hero. And so I never seen him ever in my life ever, like, need help for anything. So The day that he got sick, I remember him not being able to get out of bed, and he lived next door to me. And I was like, wow, this is weird, because, you know, my dad's never, ever asked for help. And so I had to help him get out of bed. I got him to the VA clinic in Casa Grande, and they said immediately, you know, hey, your dad's having kidney failure. He has to have a blood transfusion. He's got pneumonia. Say goodbye. You know, say goodbye. So they took my dad to the VA hospital in Tucson, and over a 7-day period from him saying, say goodbye, you know, and I said goodbye to my dad. I put my head on his chest and cried. You know, I was ready to, you know, try to figure out, you know, my dad's dying and I'm saying goodbye to him. Well, over that span, I seen my dad fight back and he totally beat everything that was happening. And he was scheduled to go home after the 7 days. And he was going to have dialysis the rest of his life, but he was going home. He was going to live.
That's where you get it from.
That's where you get it from, the fight. So that night was the first night I'd left the hospital. And they called me and they said, hey, you need to get down here right away. Something went bad. And so they told me my dad died of a heart attack. I just didn't believe it. So make a long story short, they did a kidney biopsy that night without telling me or any of the family members. And they left him in his room unattended. He slowly bled to death. So they let my dad sit in a room and bleed to death, 3.8 liters of blood. So he died of a hematosis. So I had a long battle with suing the United States of America. You couldn't sue a doctor. You didn't know who killed my dad. And after I did the autopsy at a different hospital, they came out and they admitted guilt. But it like completely just fucked my life up, dude. It like, you know, seeing the way it happened. And I had a bunch of family members who were telling me, oh, you're just handling your dad's death wrong. You know, the hospital's not at fault. And I was like, no, man, something is wrong here. Like something is definitely wrong. They, you know, and they thought I was going crazy, losing my dad.
Yeah.
So in that time, there was like a 2 week period of time where I was waiting on the results from the autopsy. We're having my dad's service. I started dabbling a little bit. Like I really don't even know exactly how it happened, but I know I just started using a little bit of meth and dude, it helped.
Yeah.
Like it helped. It took all my problems like kind of away. It was really strange, you know, and I was like, damn, you know, so over time though, you know, like the meth took over and it made everything in life that was important, unimportant. Mm-hmm. And all the dumb shit that's not important in life, really, really important. The people, the places, the things that I was doing, it was all, you know, like looking back on it, it's like, wow, I can't believe like I made that a priority over like the people who really care about me and love me. And
for sure.
And all that mattered was hanging out with a bunch of fucking idiots, man, who, you know, we're doing meth.
But anything to numb the pain and not think about it. And yeah, that's what people don't realize. A lot of times that's what, you know, that's what I got into drugs for, you know, to numb pain on stuff. Because when you're out there getting high, you don't realize all the pain you have until you're coming down, you're not on drugs anymore. And then it hits you and it's 10 times harder, you know? But, so did you go like, cause I would have taken that really, really bad and probably went straight off the deep end, been mad at the world. Like, did you go completely off the deep end? And then how quick did you start getting in trouble?
So I went completely off the deep end and, that was 2005 and I started getting in trouble pretty much right away.
Instantly,
you know?
Yeah.
And so, but with no criminal history, no record, no nothing, you know, like I was able to kind of run amok for a while and kind of get out of it, you know, like, you know, here's some probation, got out, did some probation, but didn't teach me. And, then, you know, here's your first little prison sentence. They gave me a year and a half. You know, I sat in county jail, I think for 8 or 9 months and I hit a yard and got released.
Yep.
That didn't work.
And it almost works the opposite. Cause I would say this, and I always say, I'm thankful that I got 12 years in prison. I did such hard time because once you always have the thought of, damn, I don't want to go to prison. Once you've been to prison, especially for a year and a half, I would have probably taken that and made me worse because now I'm not scared of prison.
Right.
And two, I met a bunch more dudes that are up to no good.
Right.
And I would have probably went out and been even worse. Was right. that your case or well, what happened was, after you got out?
That was definitely my case. So it didn't teach me anything. I was like, well, this shit is easy.
Nothing. Yeah.
Like
why are people scared of this?
Yeah. You think the first time you're like thinking about walking on a prison yard and you're so scared. And I was just like anybody else. You know, I remember the first day you walk out there and you're in your sandals and a big old jumpsuit. And you're walking on the gate with all these new arrivals and everybody on the yard is at the gate looking at you.
Everybody's staring at you.
Everybody's staring at you.
I got goosebumps to just remember
those
days.
Every race is staring at you. And you hear all these stories about what happens the first time you get there. And, you know, and I was a kid, you know, I was still a kid. I was 27 years old or whatever, but I was a kid, you know. And so, it was scary. And I remember getting there and wondering what's going to happen, you know. And first story, the first time that I went is I went there and I'd seen some people that I knew from county jail, some people from my hometown, from Hilo and from Casa Grande. And he was the chief and he was like half native, half black. Then you're out with the blacks. So right when I got there, he was like, hey, Josh, what's up, man? And blah, blah, blah. And this and that. I was like, oh, it's good to see somebody I know.
Yeah.
So they had a gym in Winslow where I was at. They had a full court gymnasium. I thought that was so cool because I'd missed playing basketball and dude gave me a pair of shoes and a pair of shorts and I went and balled that night. I was so happy. Well, after that, the white boys came and got at me and they're like, hey, where'd you get those shoes? Where'd you get that? Where'd you get those shorts?
Yeah, that's how it works.
I was like, well, my homie gave them to me, and they were like, well, who's your homie? And I pointed him out. He's like, that dude's black. You can't be taking nothing from him. I was like, I'll take stuff.
And that's a minimum yard.
It's a minimum yard.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, I'll take stuff whoever I want to take it from. You didn't offer me nothing. You know, so that first night I'm fighting two little skinheads in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm scrapping the first night because I'm not going to, you know, I'm like, you ain't going to tell me who I can borrow a pair of shoes from.
Yeah.
You know, so I learned the politics really, really fast, really, really quick. And all I did was a dude that I've known forever let me borrow some shoes so I can go hoop.
Literally.
And, you know, I remember I was in the bathroom and I still didn't have my own shit yet, I don't think. And I was brushing my teeth in the bathroom, and all of a sudden a couple little skinheads rolled up and they were like, what's up? I was like, what's up? They're like, hey, you know, you messed up, right? I was like, fuck, man, I've been here like 20 minutes. I haven't even got to chow yet.
Yeah,
I haven't got to eat yet.
I don't even know the rules yet.
Yeah, I don't even know the rules yet, you know? And they're like, well, you got to scrap over what you did. I was like, let's go. You know,
yeah.
That was my introduction to prison. So I scrapped a couple of dudes. Afterwards, they're like, you know, all the love in the world because I scrapped my ass off with these two little youngsters, and I was a youngster. So, you know, we went all over that bathroom, and, you know, I'm not going to stop. I didn't stop. You know, I didn't lose. I don't think I won, you know? But I was scrapping with those dudes until, you know, they made a stop because it got so loud in there. We knocked down the part of the door to the bathroom. And then afterwards, they were like, hey, you got heart, man.
Yeah.
We love you. What's up? You know, like, here's what you can and can't do. And I don't think I ever apologized for borrowing shoes from somebody, and I still won't, you know? Like,
absolutely.
I'm not a racist person. Prison will make you racist a little bit,
or you even have to play the role of being racist, you know?
Right. So, you know, there's like you know, like the first time that was my first introduction, and so, you know, basically you got to adapt your environment, and
absolutely,
that was my learning lesson.
Okay, so when you get out after that sentence, what's next?
Back to drugs.
And how long are you out this time? Because me, when I was using drugs, like, I was sure this, like, the second I start using it, it's probably a week or two and I'm locked up for something, you know?
I think I lasted like a year and a half, and then kind of what did it was the music, you know? So I started doing music again, like, or not again, but for the first time. Like
after prison?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's when I got into music.
Yeah, like, I want to hear this.
2010, 2011. And I went out with my wife and we did some karaoke, and I thought it was dumb, you know?
I've heard
this story. I don't want to go see karaoke. And she's, come on, let's go sing karaoke. So I went with her to sing karaoke. And then that night the bar asked me to host karaoke, like, on the weekends for a couple $100 on the weekend. They said, dude, you sing so great. Let's get you hosting karaoke. So I started doing that. And then, so I started hosting karaoke like every night as a job, 6 or 7 nights a week. And I was making a lot of money doing it. And then that turned into a full band. And then, so the full band turned into Las Vegas, turned into like having to stay at the Golden Nugget. You know,
wow.
I was making $1,000 a night. And what a horrible place to be if you have a drug addiction.
Oh, for sure.
And somebody giving you $1,000 a night, 3 nights a week, you know, to, and a stay at the Golden Nugget. I was living inside the Golden Nugget.
Oh, that's a recipe for disaster.
My room. You know, with drugs comes gambling. With gambling comes women. With the whole thing was horrible.
It's all a big package of trouble.
I was being a horrible father, a horrible man. And, you know, I was up there thinking I was a rock star because people were coming out to watch me sing country music, man. And I had a record deal. And I had, like, basically everything that you could ask for again. But, you know, like, usually by the time my next show came around that following Wednesday, I was dead ass broke. I either had $40,000 or $50,000 in my pocket from winning a bunch of money gambling, or I was dead ass broke. And 95% of the time I was dead ass broke, and I was committing felonies trying to survive until my show came around again on Wednesday. So people were seeing this Josh Scott guy singing country music, and they had no idea what I was doing from
Saturday to
Wednesday. To, like, I was in some of the horrible plates off. Like, I wasn't on the strip. Like, I was, like, off in East Las Vegas, like, you know, where the gangsters are.
Yeah.
And I'm out there committing felonies, man, surviving, trying to, like, you know, and, like, had no idea that you would see this dude over here on these 3 days, like, what he was doing the other 4 days. So I was living a double life, man. And it just, like I said, the drug addiction is just so powerful that it'll make you do stupid shit, man.
And double life is never fun. You know, I had that same problem. I was always putting on this front that I was this nice guy, or my parents had money growing up, and it was always a front. You know, I always say this is the first time I've ever, like, been true to myself,
yeah.
And I'm not trying to overcompensate. I'm who I am now, and you could accept me or not accept me.
Right.
So you developed your, like, real singing passion during your next prison sentence? Is that what I heard?
No, I think I developed before this prison sentence, but this prison sentence that I got the next time, you know, it was a chunk, you know. So it was 6.5 years, and then right towards the end of that sentence, they page-2'd me. Right before my release date, on my birthday, April 26th, my
and
brother...
And page-2, just for everybody that doesn't know, is page-2, which means you're already locked up, and then they bring up another old case on you.
Yeah, from 7 years. They have 7 years to do it.
Yep.
So, and they waited the full... Maricopa County waited the full 7 years. April 26th, they came and they said, hey, Scott, you know, roll up. You, what do you mean roll up? I'm getting ready to go home in 6 months. No, you got a page-2 in Maricopa County. So I just lost my brother, Scotty, my older brother, to an overdose on heroin.
Ouch.
April 3rd. He died, and then on April 26th, I got page-2, getting ready to go home. So I had to go fight another case, man, in Maricopa County, and I got it down to 4 years. So it gave me like another 2 years in prison. So
the
6.5, which you know I should have done like 5 years on, turned into you know
8 or 9 years.
Yeah, so about 8.5 years, and it made me bitter, man. It made me just hate everything. So you know, while I was in there, I just I spent a lot of time in the hole. I started at a 2 yard, and you know I got released from a maximum custody yard, you know, similar.
Same here.
So, you know, I started, you know, where you can go out every day, walk around, play softball, volleyball, you know, card room all day long to, you know, to where, you know, you're in your cell most of the day.
And what a difference in a world, because prison, I always share this, like, because I don't even consider people that just did time on minimum yards that they did prison time, because it's literally camp, like half the yards you could escape every day if you wanted to, because you're not dumb enough to escape. Like there's, when you go up to a lot of 3 yards, even the 4 yards, 5 yards, it's a different world there, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to like man up and grow up real quick.
Real quick. Yeah, and you're with dudes who are in there for just killing everybody, you know?
And they don't care.
And they don't care, you know, but the crazy thing about that too is, man, some of the most solid dudes I've ever met were just straight killers.
Straight up.
And that sounds really horrible to say, but like you get them, you know, and a lot of the dudes that are in there for murder and doing stupid shit, they were on meth when they did it.
Yeah.
And then you meet them in there, man, and you think, like, I'm worried about this. I was, you know, I was celled up with a dude who was doing life, and he's one of the coolest cats, man, I ever met. And
I said a lot of the yards I was on, I would say 70-75% of the yard wasn't coming home, or if they were, it was at least another 20-plus years, you know?
Yeah, like, and those dudes were like, those are like the dudes, the best dudes to do time with.
Yeah, some of the guys, and people don't even know this, like a lot of guys in there, the killers that we're talking about, no joke, like they don't want to fight, even if they're tough, they'll just rather stab you just because they don't even want, they're just too lazy. They're like, I don't even fight anyone anymore. If I have a problem with someone, I'm just going to stab them. You know, it's so much easier for me. And you're just like, and those are the dudes you're spending every day with. And those are the guys that are molding our brains when they're in there, you know, which is so hard. That's why it's so tough to reverse the thinking when you get out. Clearly why the recidivism rate's so high. Did you do anything positive? Because I was sure about this. I did 12 years straight and I did nothing positive my entire prison sentence. The only reason I was able to stay out of prison is because luckily I went to the whole solitary confinement for my last like 8 months or so I could get my mind right, you know. Did you do anything positive or was it just...
No, I think I was in a, you know, I think I'm a natural born leader. Mm-hmm. So I think I was able to do a lot of positive stuff. I was able to help a lot of people on the different yards that I was at. And man, we were able to like feed the whole yard. And
cool.
I was able to do some positive stuff that I'm proud of and help a lot of people. And I see a lot of people now that I've known and they reach out to me and tell me thank you for the little things, you know, because, you know, up until the point where I got to page-2 and I got really, really bitter, then that's when I got in a little bit of trouble, you know. That's when I came back and got in some trouble, went to a 4 yard. But towards the end of my sentence, an officer, SSU Sergeant Duhon, who just actually came to my last show. You think you met him? Like mm-hmm. He was at our event. He was.
And we got to tell everybody, if they don't know, the SSU Sergeant, those are like the detectives in there. So it's like you got the police officers and then the detectives. The SSU is like what gets everybody for gang activity. They're like the detectives in there for everybody that doesn't know.
So they come looking for you every day and they're trying to basically ruin your life. And this dude, Duhon, man, he was a cool, just straight up normal human being who treated me with respect, treated me right, asked me about my situation, what was going on. I explained it to him. He seen the path that I was going down. And he helped me, you know. So he helped me get off of the 4 yard. He got me to a 3 yard. They had a band room, got me a job in the band room. So I was able just to like check out band equipment every day.
Oh, there you go.
Dudes would come in and like, you know, I'd check out the band equipment. I would sit in there and I would just write. I'd write music, man, and had a guy play the guitar. Another officer, actually CO3 Timmerman, who actually was my boss in the band room. He had a band on the street, so he would come in, man, and play guitar to my songs.
Oh, that's cool.
We'd make music, man. We're making music for like the last 6 or 8 months before I came home. And so I got really, like the last 6 or 8 months, man, I spent like just writing music in a band room. And You know, like I got my creativity with music back up, and my passion for music like really got me through that last year or so where, you know, I was doing extra time and missing stuff that I know I should have been home for, which is my son's senior year of graduation, his senior year of football, all those extra, all that little bit of extra time that I got. I missed some really, really crucial points in my family's life. And it was tough, man. It was tough to swallow. I dealt with a lot of guilt and a lot of pain. You know, I was supposed to be home for my son's graduation. I was supposed to see him play his senior year of football. So I missed every Friday night lights with my son. I missed a lot, man. But like I said, I'm not proud of my past, but I'm also not ashamed of it.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if people listening, if that'll make sense to you or not.
For sure.
I'm not proud of it, but I'm not ashamed of it because it's molded me into the individual that I am today, which I'm really proud of that person.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that just don't realize what you have and like how every day, every little thing that this person might take for granted, I will never do again. And it makes me want to like cry thinking about like all the things normal people take for granted, because like I get up every morning and look at my daughter, you know, a cup of coffee my wife brings me, being able to sit here with you, man, and
I get goosebumps right now.
You know, like just the normal stuff that got taken away from me because of the mistakes that I made. I'm so grateful for them today that I don't know if a lot of people will get it, but
they don't get it, man.
You know, you do, and so it's special. Like life's special now, and I try to take advantage of every day, and I try to help as many people as I can. The fundraisers that I do, and people on the side of the road, man. If it's a dude asking for a dollar, if it's a fundraiser, or a family that I could help. Like I see people, like one of my buddies got in a car crash and his fiance died, and I donated one of my shows to him. We raised like $4,000 for him that night. So like, I'm just about like just trying to do positive shit, and it's not for a front. It's not because I want people to, you know, I didn't post none of that saying that I did that. You know, I don't do it for that, man. I do it because I have a platform now to where God gave me a second chance, and he gave me an angle to be able to do some good. And that's all I want to do is good stuff, man.
Absolutely. And I want to relate to that, because we always talk about what you're just talking about there. And I always say gratitude is the biggest key to life, you know? So I want to bring up another cool story. So I get involved with this nonprofit organization. It's called the Prep Program out in LA that I just got back from yesterday. Yeah. Sister Mary, she's a famous, just an angel. And she gets these dudes that were all doing life sentences, 90% of them from crimes that they committed when they were kids.
The black dude, man, first steak he has eaten in forever. You bought it for him, right?
Yeah.
That's and good stuff, man.
It's just, you know, when you get out of yourself and you can actually help people, and we can use our screwed up messages. And then there's what's crazy is I went there to try and help them. And so I want to rewind a little bit. So I met them a month and a half ago, and I went there and I get out of the car and I see this OG. The second I pull up, we're South Central LA. And dudes, you know, we can tell dudes that did a lot of prison time. I'd heard these guys did some prison time there. So I was excited to meet them, you know. And I get out of the car and I say, "What's up, OG?" This big OG black dude was like, "What's up, man? Just taking this trash out, enjoying this fresh air." And I was like, "Oh, enjoying the fresh air. I mean, if you could find gratitude just in breathing fresh air, you know,
taking but
the rest
out.
Of the public doesn't know that, you know, right?" So, and I was so moved by this place. And then come to find out all these guys in there were doing, one dude did 33 years, another guy 43 straight, 42, 44 years straight. And I'm like, I've never been in a room where I'm the short timer, you know?
Yeah.
And I was so moved, and these guys had one set of clothes, didn't even have a cell phone. And I went back I got back yesterday, and I drove an entire truckload of clothes down that everybody helped me donate. I donated my stuff. And I wanted to take these guys just to dinner for one, I told them I'm there for as much as them as they're there for me. You know, like I needed gratitude in my life, and the higher my gratitude level is, the better off I'm going to be, and the more success I'm going to have, and the more people I'm going to be able to help. So I went back and just to show you how selfless this guy is, man, and just that anybody can learn from this. He knew I went back there just to bring him clothes and take him to dinner. And I get there and I asked Sister Mary to call him because he wasn't there. And he says he's sorry, but he's going to have to pass on dinner because he goes to a meeting with some youngsters every Wednesday night that he helps out. And he walks 2.2 miles to this meeting in a suit because he likes wearing dress clothes. And I literally hunted him down, man. I told Sister Mary, I was like, "If you even know kind of where this is, I'm driving down." Like, cause I'm like, I'm not going to do this trip without taking this guy to dinner, you know? And I show up over there and we wait outside for him to get done. And I see him and he orders we take him to Black Angus. And he didn't even get a steak. Everybody else got steaks there. I took five of these guys that were lifers to dinner, you know? Didn't even know how to order, didn't know how to read a menu. And he orders cheesy breadsticks as an appetizer for a meal. And he gets it and no joke, cuts it up like it's a prison meal, you know? And starts eating with a fork. And then he tells me, Peter, you got to try this. You got to try this. I'm like, dude, I get those every time I go out to eat as an appetizer. I take two bites. I don't even think anything more of it, you know? And then I was just like, but the fact that he was going to miss out on like the one chance he was going to have a dinner paid for when, and who knows when he's going to have that opportunity again, just because he wants to help people. And then I talked to him. I was like, are you like in recovery? He goes, nah. And this is how he talks, no joke. And he's like, nah, I just noticed that I talk to a lot of youngsters, man. And a lot of these kids, they like what I say and just try to be a positive message for the world. You know, there's a lot of screwed up people out here. So he goes, I just try to be positive. So he was going to walk 2.2 miles there, 2.2 miles back, give up his time when he's not even in recovery just to try and help people miss out on dinner. And I'm like, and you think the stuff that we bitch about, it just puts your whole life into perspective.
Yeah.
So they gave me a painting and it says on the very bottom of this painting that they wrote, it was from a lifer, and it said, I am now writing this and I'm on the 25th year of a life sentence without parole. And it's a picture of stars and stuff. And he says, I wish everybody listening to this could even get the true feelings or thoughts behind this, you know, because you can relate to this when you're looking out those cell windows or something, you know, you're not getting out, and you're, even when you do get wrecked, you never get out of wreck at night. So you never see the stars. And I could just put myself right in there and just being in that miserable, lonely cell of his. And he just wanted to help and just try to pass a positive message. He's like, just take a walk, get out, enjoy the stars, you know? And if you could find gratitude and air, it's just like, there's so much we can learn from these people in the world, you know? And it's like the greatest, most humbling experience of my life. And I told them all that. I like thanked them. And we cried the entire 2 days, you know? And I'm like, I've been out of prison 6.5 years. And I feel like these dudes are 60 days out and they did 40 plus years and I'm learning from them, you know? And yeah. It's just like, but if you can pass the message and just be grateful and gratitude, you can go so far in life, you know?
Well, look what you're doing, man. You drove to LA to get these dudes clothes, man. Like, you know what I mean? And so, and like, you know, you guys are helping each other. You know, you're going down there to help them, but you found out that
they're helping me more than that.
They're helping you more than you're helping them. And everybody needs help, man. Like, it's hard to come out here and do it alone, right? Everybody needs help, you know? So if everybody would just like, you know, not, you know, like the song that I have this time, you know, which was, it was my first release, and it's, you know, it's up over a few million streams. I've had so many people reach out to me and from so many different walks of life and tell me how that song hit them. And the last verse, you know, before I go into the chorus, it's like, you know, I say, you know, this time I'm going to be a little less needy, do my best to give instead of being greedy. Take a little time, take it all in, take a deep breath, do it all again. You know, I think one of the lines in the song is, take a little drive in my pickup truck, windows down and the feel good up this time, you know, this time. And that's, you know, when you're in the situation we were, man, that's what we thought about was this time. Hey, this time when I go home, I want to do this. This time I want to be a better person. This time I want to be a better father, a better husband. And that's where the song This Time came. And, you know, it's my most popular song. It's my anthem. And, you know, it's just basically just what you said, you know, like, hey, man, this time I'm gonna drive to L.A. and give these dudes clothes, and these dudes are just like, man, this time I want to look up at the stars and I want to enjoy them and I want to enjoy the fresh air this time, you know. And just like the end of the song, you know, this might be your last time.
For sure.
You know, and it's a true story, man. This might be your last time this time. So use your this time for every fucking thing that it's worth.
I love
every
that.
Fucking second you have, man, make it your this time.
Live every day and, like it's your last.
And, you know, and so that's like, that's the way I live my life around that song. And I've had some, you know, some pretty, a couple big name artists that wanted to cut that song. And I said, no, you know, it's my song. And, you know, it's not for anybody. That song's not for anybody else to sing, you know. And although that bottle won iHeart Song of the Year, like this time is, that's a song and
means more.
Yeah. And everything you said right now, it kind of takes me to, you know, to this time and this interview right here. And, you know, today, what are we going to do after this? And like, who are you going to go help after this? And that's a beautiful thing about the life that I think both of us are living is every morning when you wake up, this time might be a different thing. You know, like we're not on a set schedule. You had your career you were doing as far as, you know, with selling cars and you're making a good living. But you know, you knew what you were going to do every day. You were going to get up and work out and you were going to go try to make a shit ton of money and sell as many cars as you could and bankroll as much money. But you weren't, that wasn't giving you gratitude.
Anything.
That wasn't giving you any kind of, you know, any kind of good feeling in your life. So you dropped it all, which I admire, you know, and I was driving a dump truck, man. And we were living paycheck to paycheck, but I was happy, you know, I was mm-hmm. happy. And, you know, somehow by the grace of God, like I went through several interviews to become a high school basketball coach. I coached my daughter's high school basketball team. And
what a miracle that is.
That's a miracle in itself. You know, to be a janitor at a school would be hard after the things that I've been through, but I'm a high school basketball coach, man. I get a paycheck.
Yeah. Cause a janitor. And I want to ask you about that too. Like, so I always share that I aspired, like my top of the benchmark. If I did everything I said and I was a success story for what I shot for when I got out of prison, I shot to make minimum wage, probably doing construction, and somehow stay sober, but be boring as hell and have a boring life and hang out with a bunch of old, boring people. That was like literally what I aspired to do.
Yeah.
But if you're grateful for just being free, you can find gratitude in that, you know?
Yeah.
So did you, the second you got out, you mentioned you were driving a dump truck. I want to get into how you transitioned to that, to the country scene, because we have a lot of similarities there too. Because the more I wanted to make money, once I made a little bit of money, I was happy. And then like the more money I made, the more empty I felt. Cause I was like, I'm not doing anything for anybody else.
So I wasn't making a lot of money to drive a dump truck, you know, but I had a job immediately when I came home. I had some people who cared about me and wanted to make sure that I had employment. And so I immediately started going to work for a landscaping company. I was driving a dump truck for my buddy, Mark Pass. And, I was making decent money. Hell yeah, I was making 20 some bucks an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I got my CDL. I was happy, man, and you know, I started getting really involved with my daughter's basketball. She was a sophomore. I got home for her full junior season. Her full sophomore season, and then last year her junior season. The athletic director seen how involved I was with the girls. I was taking all the girls after practice. We were going to LA Fitness. I was working them all. And he said, hey, man, he's like, you're getting, these girls are improving and like what you're doing. You're like, would you like to get involved? I said, well, here's my situation, man. Like, you know, like here it is. And he was like, oh shit, you know? So, but he believed in me. So we went through, you know, we went through H&R and public resources and principals and mm-hmm. people in the school board and, you know, like not just that school, but all kinds of crazy shit.
For sure.
And they told me, man, yeah, here's the keys. Here's the keys to the school. Here's the keys to the school, man. We trust you with these girls. Go coach them up, you know? And so I've been so blessed to be able to coach my daughter and be on the sideline and be in the locker room. And we just started practice on Monday, and I'm so excited about the season and getting her into college and being a part of that, you know, being able to be a part of that with my daughter, like being able to stand on the sideline, coach her, watch her when she's happy, happy, joyful buckets, and then be there to hold her when she misses a shot at the end of a game or turns the ball over, see her cry, you know, God, how special is that I'm able to do that? God has given me that opportunity. And the whole time I was in prison, like I prayed every night. I never missed a day. I never missed a day of prayer ever. Like I'm not super into pushing God on people mm-hmm. and I don't go to church. You know, I don't read the Bible a lot, you know,
yeah.
But I pray every day, multiple times a day, and I'll never miss a prayer at night. And all I asked for in there was, you know, I prayed that God would just take care of my family. He would bless everybody. I prayed for everybody in prison that was in my situation. I prayed for everybody that was coming and going. And just, I asked God, take care of my family. Just give me one more opportunity to go out there and be a good man. That's it. Give me a chance. Just give me a chance. And what I learned about God in there is you get these people that get in really bad situations and they think God's going to work this miracle and get them out of it.
Now they need him.
That shit don't work.
Yeah.
You know, God's not going to get you out of it, but he'll get you through it.
For sure.
Right? And he got me through it. And he gave me that opportunity. And I still hit my knees every night and thank God and still say, hey, take care of my family. I never prayed for myself ever. Didn't pray for my health or my safety. Just take care of, you know, because that's our worst fear in there. Our worst fear is losing somebody that we love and being completely helpless to help them. Right? Because we're helpless in there.
Mm-hmm.
If they're doing bad on bills or there's no groceries in the house or, you know, somebody's sick, they got a cold. The most horrible feeling in the world is to be in there and not be able to help your loved
helpless.
Ones. That's, and so my biggest fear was like, don't let one of my kids die or my wife die or, you know, just give me a chance to go out there and be a man again. And God's done that for me, man. So yeah, like I'm coaching my daughter's high school basketball team, and I've got iHeartRadio Song of the Year. I'm a country music artist. I just hosted Carrie Lake's campaign, who's running for governor, and she comes to my events. You know, Ray Herndon, who's Nashville Hall of Fame, who's written 7 number ones, and you know, he co-wrote all my music. So I've played with my heroes, Mark Chestnut, Tracy Lawrence, Montgomery Gentry, Lainey Wilson. You know, I've been on the tickets with all these heroes of mine, and I've done this all in a year.
I was going to say, tell them how long you've been out, because
I've only, you know, 2 years, because coming up, my 2-year anniversary is here in a few days, but I've attacked the music thing just the last year, and it happened because we were having dinner one night, and my daughter and my sister-in-law and my brother were having dinner at Texas Roadhouse, and they say, hey, dude, are you going to just, like, drive a dump truck, or are you going to – these songs you have are good.
After a year? Because my family was still, like, a year, just like, dude, keep doing whatever you're doing, just don't go back.
And we were just – dude, that's how it happened. So we were eating dinner one night at Texas Roadhouse in Chandler, eating dinner. My daughter says, hey, Dad, me and my friends sing your songs all the time, like, come on, I'm 16 years old and telling you your songs are good. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to drive a jump truck? You're going to see if your songs are any good? That very second, I get on my phone. I Google where Ray Herndon's at. I never met Ray Herndon. But if you're a country music fan and you're from Arizona, he's Arizona's local legend, right? This guy is McBride and the Ride, 1996 CMA Artist of the Year. I Googled where he's at. He owns Handlebar Jays in Scottsdale, and he was playing that night. I went directly from there to Handlebar Jay. I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, hey, Mr. Herndon, my name is Josh Scott. I think I've got some good songs. Would you listen to them?
Wow.
And he said, why don't you get up on stage and sing with me tonight? I said, what?
So you got your one shot.
Yeah. So he had me up on stage that night. I sang 4 or 5 old classic country songs with him. 2 weeks later, I'm recording an album with Ray Herndon, and I quit my job and put every penny that I had into my music. My brother and sister sold their boat for $10,000, and I dropped every cent I had into music, and now I'm a pretty successful country music artist with just a year in.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And I think that the stuff that I've done is a lot of hard work for me, a lot of really truth in my lyrics. I'm making real country music again, I think, which is a breath of fresh air for a lot of people. I'm just trying to kick down any door legally. Yeah, that's what I told
that's
you.
That's what you told
day,
me.
Right? I was like, kicking down doors.
I was
legally.
Like, what a cool saying. He's like, know? Yeah, you repost my stuff and you're like, keep kicking doors down the legal way. And I was just like, it's so cool even thinking of it like that.
So, you know, like, I just, every day if I have an idea in my head, I attack it. Like, I woke up one morning and I seen what Carrie Lake was doing in Arizona and how she quit her job, you know, on the news because she didn't want to lie to the public anymore. And I was moved by that. So I reached out to her team. I was like, hey, if I can ever be any like music at your event or like help out in any way, like I'm down. I was like, I think what you're doing is badass. You know, like she quit her job because they were telling her to lie to us. And she's like, I'm not doing it no more. I'm just not doing it. And now she's going to be our governor. And now she's doing events with me, you know? And like, I just went and hosted her event. Like, so anything is possible. Like, right. There's no limitations on what you can do because you've been to prison.
Literally none.
The people that have limitations are the people that put the limitations on themselves. You've proved that. I've proved that. Our boy DJ Cruz.
Yes.
That dude was in prison for 10 years, and now he works for the Department of Corrections. He wears a badge.
I went to Chipotle with him the other day, but he gets a cop discount.
Yeah.
Literally, he gets a police officer discount at Chipotle. Yeah.
Like, so, like, if you tell me, I mean, listen, I'm all about helping you, right? And I don't want to just help people who've been to prison. I just want to help anybody who needs help, right?
For sure.
But the people who get out of prison, and listen, I'm not hating on these dudes, you know what I mean? But a lot of people that I've ran across, they're, oh, poor fucking me. I've been to prison. I can't get a job. My felonies hang over my head. I might as well just go fucking break the law and do drugs again. Well, that's on you, man. You're a fucking idiot. Because there is absolutely no limitations. And if you use that, you're just making excuses on why you don't want to work your ass off and go get it done. You know,
sure.
Go get it done, man. Like, go get it done.
How I was my first year out. You know, I said I couldn't get a job. I couldn't do this. I have too many prison tattoos. Why would I fill an application? I've never had a job before. You know, I was 30 years old. But it's about, like, you just got to get that one person to take the chance on you. And I would say your moment was that Ray Herndon thing. So you could either...
Yeah.
You get your one chance, you want to do it, you take your shot, which is what you did, and look what it turns into. But people are just scared to take the next step out here. Everybody's so complacent. And that's what I feel like us from prison have an advantage on with the rest of the world. And this is why I feel like we can help so many people that haven't been to prison, because you learn so much about mental strength in there. And then you learn so much about gratitude, because when you lose everything, you have grateful. Yeah. Know, gratefulness in small things.
Just
you know,
what
just
we
like
just
breathing
about,
fresh
like,
air.
All, you know, all those little things that seem maybe just unimportant to most people is to you and I are they're gigantic.
And I mean, your stuff is taking off now too, and it's crazy when you think about. And so now you're coaching high school.
Yeah. Coach my girls, coach my high school basketball team. Super proud of that.
With when you did a 10-year prison sentence, I did 12 years. I'm actually going to go back and speak to the high school that I didn't even graduate from.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to go start speaking there. And I didn't even pass the ninth grade in my high school. And you talk about having keys to the high school. I have keys to the church, yeah. which was right next to the one that I robbed before when I was a kid, you know. So you can literally do anything you want as long as you make the change.
And I never robbed a school for the record, but you got me there.
Did a lot of bad stuff that I was not proud of. I was not a good person as a kid for sure. But it's just proof that you could literally do, and I'm not joking, and it sounds cliche, anything in the world you want to. And I always said last week when I was with Sheriff Lamb, if you want to shoot to be the sheriff when you get out of jail, be the sheriff. You can.
Well, that's one thing you can run for is like not have and not matter about your.
You can have a felony.
People can vote for you, and it don't matter what your record is. So if you can go be mayor or governor or sheriff or any of that shit. So
absolutely.
That's the one. That's the one avenue you can take with like, do you have any felonies on your record? Doesn't matter because the people are voting me in.
Yeah.
So who knows what's in store? Like really, who knows, man? Like, and like I'm not really into the politics per se. I believe in like being a good person and. You know, I want like, and we talked about it earlier before we came on, like, you know, like when you transition from prison to the real world, man, you want it to be as easy as possible. These dudes can't afford fucking $5 gas and, you know, cost of living is fucking $4,000 a month to live and eat. And, you know, who can do that when you come home?
Yeah.
So they need guys like you helping them. They need places to go. They need clothes. They need all this. So everything that you're providing, dude, is like needed by these people. And some of these people who are going out and breaking the law. And, you know, I also, like, I get it, too, sometimes, because it is hard to come out here if you don't have anybody and make it, because everything's so expensive.
Which is what I'm starting to do all this now, and that's what, like, my end goal is to do that. I want to have, like, a safe haven for people that get out of prison that don't have any other resources. You know, right. I was lucky enough. I have an awesome family, and I had some help when I got
great
out.
Great family you got to go to. And
for
same
sure.
Same with me. My
Absolutely.
Wife stuck by me the whole time. I had a home to go to, a loving family, a place to lay my head at night. Not everybody has that, and you get these... You know, I've visited some of my friends in these halfway houses.
Oh.
These halfway houses are just places to go do drugs.
Literally.
Like, you got a curfew. Be home by 10 so you can get high with all these dudes that are here.
I'm as tough as I get to. And I went and spoke last week at one. And, like, it's literally a, sober living house. And
they're horrible.
There was a meeting there, bro. I was like, I went out to my truck twice to make sure it was locked. I was like, I'm like watching, looking over my back. And I'm like, dude, it felt like a prison yard out here. You know, I'm like, dude, you just feel bad for them, you know, but.
Yeah, you want to get back into drugs, dude? You need to find some? Go to a halfway house.
Yeah, seriously.
We're not allowed. Yeah, go there. Yeah, and that's probably bad advice for people. Yeah, but if you're looking for some, you want to break your sobriety streak, go to a halfway house where they're supposed
seriously.
To be helping people. And I think a lot of those halfway houses, dude, they're just in it because they get that paycheck from the government. They're not really there to help nobody.
Yeah.
Those people are in it for the paycheck, dude. And those people are fucking scumbags. That's what it is. Most of those halfway houses. So yeah, I think in the future, like I've got these things with the C4 Foundation and St. Jude's Hospital that I work with now, that, you know, part of the, some of the stuff that I do goes to the proceeds of that. I would love to, like, you know, and I think, like I said, you can do anything. I would love to have like a halfway house for people that provides jobs, that's actually clean, that is ran by somebody like you or I, that, like, you know,
knows it's, what it
that,
is.
That it's going to help a dude, and these people aren't going to, like, you know, like, feel uncomfortable. Like, it's not going to be some fucking lame that's there, you know, like some dude who's there to work and, like, you know, tell you what you can and can't do. No one wants to hear that shit coming home.
Yeah.
We didn't want to hear it for the whole time we were in there. You don't want to be told what to do. You just want somebody who's going to help you and have your back, right? Right or wrong. And, like, you know, you can count on them. So I think more of that needs to be done. Just basically what you're doing, dude, is about if we had more people doing what you're doing, the transition would be easier, and I think a lot more people would succeed. So, you know,
well, that's definitely the plan in the future.
Yeah. So just hats off to you, bro. Like, for real, on all the stuff that you're doing. I think it's just going to grow, and the more people that you meet, and all the people that you're meeting, if all those people would get behind it, and we could like build
a big
huge
movement.
Circle, you know, a movement of just people that want to help, you know, because there's so many people out there with shit tons of money that you just, you know, they're looking for something to do with it. Put it in something like that, dude, where you're actually changing someone's life for the better.
Absolutely.
You're giving somebody a chance to go out and have a life, you know. If you think about doing that with your money, if you think about instead of putting it in the stock market or putting this to make a few dollars, if you've got so much money and we can meet these people, think about putting it in a foundation where you're actually giving somebody a chance at life.
For sure.
Right? Instead of going back and sitting in a box the rest of their life. So, you know, those are the kind of things I want to get involved in.
And people that don't know, it's how much that can help you too. So when I came back from LA, like, if you've never helped anybody or done something not for yourself, like, go try it one time and I promise you, you won't regret it and you'll want to do it more. You know, like, I came back and right when I got home and I saw Hannah, I was just like, I was like bawling my eyes out and I just like hugged her. And I was like apologizing to her. And I was like, I'm sorry, I haven't been better. I'm sorry I've been losing my temper. I'm like, because the second I can see these guys that had no freedom and no chance of life again ever, and they find gratitude and breathing fresh air and stuff, like, it just changes you for life, you know? So I went there to help them and they helped me more than I could ever thought anybody could help me, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, what do you mean? I was just like, I've learned so much from these guys and it's just insane. And you too, like, I've been out 6.5 years now and I feel like I made some money, but I'm behind the eight ball. Like, I got to learn from you guys, you know? Like, I can't believe you've only been out 2 years, you know? And these guys, and I'm like, so I said sorry to her and I was like, I promise I'm going to be a better man, you know? Like, every day I'm going to be better, you know? And I'm going to put that painting up that they gave me right above my bed so that the second I wake up. And that's what my boy Bradley just told me last week when I was there, and he told me that, like, live on air when we were filming his show. He asked me if I had any advice, and I said my number one thing would be gratitude, of course. And he's like, well, when do you get your gratitude going? I was like, well, I get my, you know, morning routine. I do a meeting. I do the gym. And like, once I get done with that, then I'm like, got my gratitude. He's like, I got a better idea. He's like, why don't you wake up first thing in the morning, and the second you wake up, you say, thank God I have today.
Yeah.
And
I do that all day long. And I'll tell you something cool too. You're the first person that I've really dug in deep with my past, right? I haven't hid from it. But it's not something that I go and just volunteer. I let everybody, anytime I get into any kind of relationship with anybody, I make them aware right up front that, hey, listen, I've got a past, right? I've got some things that I've done, that it's mistakes that I've made that are there. If you want to know more about them, ask me. I'll tell you the truth. If you're okay with the man that I am right now, moving forward, business, whatever it is we're doing, then let's move forward. But I don't lie to anybody. I don't ever try to be something that I'm not. If I don't have to dive into it, I don't. A friend of ours that I just introduced you to I think you fell in love with immediately is the Barclays, right? Matt and Brandy Barclay.
Oh.
So I was on her show the other day and, you know, and she told me, she's like, Josh, she said, dude, don't hide from your past. She's like, what you have is beautiful. She says, what you've done is so moving and so inspiring. The comeback that you've made in 2 years, like what you've done with your life. She's like, don't ever hide from it. Don't ever try to like reserve it. Cause I've got some people in my life that maybe have want to manage how much I say about, you know, what I've done. And I haven't done like anything horrible anyways. Like my crimes aren't horrible crimes. They're white collar crimes.
For sure.
I was out getting money and figuring out a way to stay high.
For sure.
So I never hurt nobody. I never kicked no doors in. I never like robbed nobody. I got nothing dangerous on my record. That's why I'm there allowing me to coach a school. But you know, Brandy said to me the other day, she's like, Josh, she's like, your story is beautiful. And Brandy's, you know, she's all about God and she's all about the comeback, and her and Matt are amazing people. I love them. I fell in love with that the two of them. And she said, there's nothing for you to hide. I think she's like, I think your story is powerful. It moves people. It'll help so many people to see how what you've been able to do in 2 years, you know? And so, I think it's, you know, she opened my eyes to that and made it easier to come talk to you today about some of the stuff that I've been through. And, I mean, listen, if I can do what I've done, man, I mean, anybody can. I'm just a dumb old redneck, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not like, you know, I'm just a country boy who, you know, like when I wasn't on drugs, I'm the best friend you could ever have. I'll love you with everything I got. If you're in my circle, man, and you're my friend, I'll do anything for you and you can count on me. And that's one thing moving forward now is like, you know, my word is so important, even if it's like minuscule. Like, seriously, if I tell you like, hey, I'm going to do this on Tuesday, if I can't do it, man, I'm going to call you and tell you I can't do it. I'm not going to leave you hanging. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure anything I say to anybody now, I'm going to follow through on.
Mm-hmm.
That's more important to me than anything. I want you to know you can count on me. And I think that's huge, right?
Yeah.
I just want anybody to know that's around me, you can count on me. I am going to do what I tell you I'm going to do. And, you know, so that's important to me. Like I said, little things, just the little things, man, that I value now. And hopefully all the you know, the money. And don't get me wrong, like I support my family now. My wife's quit her job because of the vaccine mandates and the mask mandates. She had a job for 23 years that she supported our family with. She quit her job now. Wow. So I support our family with my music and my career. So, yeah, I want to make money and I want to be successful, but I want to do it the right way.
Absolutely.
I want it to be like, you know, I want it to feel right. And I want God to be involved, and I want the people that I care about to be involved. And when you go listen to my songs, I want it to mean something to you. And like, I want you to know that when you go listen to the songs that I wrote, you know, they're real, you know, they're real. And every lyric in there, even to like some of the fun ones, you know, they're all real lyrics. And the stuff that I'm about to release is, I think, going to be even better than these first five that people have heard. Like the next batch of songs is going to be even more special, because now I've written about some stuff that's happened over the last couple of years, you know, and some of the changes that I've made now and what's going on in the world today. You know, I got a song called That's Life that's coming out that I think is going to be really special. So, yeah. And I, like I said, man, I think the money will come, the success will come. I don't care about no fame. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care about no fame. I want my family to be proud of me. I want my wife to know that she has a husband that she can count on. I want my kids to look at me and say, my dad came home and he took care of us, and he's a man I want to be like, mm-hmm. you know? And before this, I wasn't a man my son wanted to be like.
Yeah.
I wasn't a father my baby girl can say, that's my daddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't that dude. And that's sad. Because what I've learned also in life is that, you know, you can mend just about any relationship with your parents. Or, you know, my mom died while I was in prison. My brother died. I lost my dad prior to that. But you can mend relationships with friends and family. But what I've learned is that, you know, you've got one chance to be a good father. You don't get any redos. No reruns on being a good dad.
For sure.
I ruined that, you know. Like, so you don't get no retries on being a father. And I messed that up pretty good. So now, like, I want to do this for them, you know, and I want them to not have to care about anything. If they need anything moving forward in life, I can provide it for them. So that's what I hope my music does. It takes care of my family. And in 10 years from now, my kids can be really, really proud of the man that I've become.
Yeah.
And they'll forget all about the prison stuff, you know, in time. So.
And that's what we're doing. And that's why I feel like I have a service to all the stuff I'm giving back, because I'm giving back for all the bad shit I did, you know, and all the shit I stole for years, and all the bad people, all the bad things I did to people, you know. So I feel like we do have a duty just to give back. And as long as we give back every day, all that stuff will be forgiven in our past, you know.
Yeah.
And what's cooler, besides helping people, I mean, you know, every time I get a DM or something, they say, hey, listen to your podcast, I saw your show on Vice, and like, I'm so inspired, I have this and that, you know, people want to be so open about it. And like, it's kind of surreal, but how good of a feeling is it to know that we're now inspiring people, you know? And we're inspiring people that never went to prison. Like, how is that, you know? And I'm like inspiring like my friends that went to college and just had like some mediocre job, but were just pushing through life, you know? And then they see what guys like me and you can do, like fresh out of prison. And then they're like, holy shit, I can do so much more in life. But they didn't think they could, because they put themselves in a fucking box, you know? And they think that since they went to college and got this job, that they're just stuck there and staying there. And I'm like, I don't understand that thinking, you know? Like, even Brad Lee said, he goes, who do you get advice from, you know? And I was just like, to be honest, Brad, like, nobody really. I mean, I try to call a couple of my like successful friends now, or like entrepreneurs or something, but I was like, for the most part, I learned watching yours and Andy Frisella's stories, Ed Milet's, all those guys, because when I made it out of prison, you know, I made some money real quick. And like within the second I started working, I blew past all my friends, you know, that were out here and went to college and stuff. So like, I can't take advice from them. I'm past them. Like, why would I take advice from someone that's behind me in life, you know? So I just had to mirror and mimic what Brad Lee's and all those guys are doing. I just try to show up. And if anybody asks me to do something, I'm there. You know, I got another thing tonight. I'm going to help some kids. And it's all about how many people you can help. And like, my biggest thing is, just like you, the money will all come in the end. I want to leave a legacy to know that I changed the world.
Yeah.
And then I righted all the wrongs from all the bad shit I did, you know. And to me, there's no greater fulfillment from that, you know. And we're both on that same path right now.
Yeah, man. I want my kids to be listening to my song, one of my songs, long after I'm gone, and my grandkids. And you know, hopefully 100 years from now, somebody's still listening to this time, and they're like, damn, that's a cool message, you know.
They'll say so much stuff, then it'll be the end. They'll be like, oh, and then did you know that guy actually went to prison too? Because they won't even talk about that. All they'll talk about all the positive stuff.
You know, that's important. And like, it's cool too, like you know, you went to one of my shows the other night, and I was able to get a kid who's in the ROTC, who's actually serving our country, who wants to be a country music artist. I got him up to open for me. And then you seen the 12-year-old girl who loves music. She follows me and become a fan. I got her up to sing some songs, you know. And so that's what it's about, man. It's about, like, you know, if Ray Herndon wouldn't have, you know, gave me a chance that day, I'd probably still be driving a dump truck, and I'd be happy with that, you know. But he opened some doors for me, to now I can help other people. You know, Mark Chestnut, man. Mark fucking Chestnut, you know, called me up on stage to sing I'll Think of Something with him, you know, and him and I are, I won't call us friends now, but you know, I got his number.
He probably would.
Yeah. You know, we're acquaintances, mm-hmm. you know? So like the shit that's happened is just like, dude, it's fairy tale type shit.
Yeah.
Like I believe it's like a movie type shit, you know, it's like, and not everybody knows the full story. I don't go telling it to them, you know, like, but the full story is fucking crazy. And that's God's work, dude.
Yeah.
That's God's work. It's a lot of hard work on my end. It's a lot of people believing in you. It's a lot of people having your back. But at the end of the day, dude, it's us. It's, you know, it's us getting up and going and making it happen. And, I believe anything you want to do, it's out there for you.
Mm-hmm, it is.
It is. I believe it's all out there for anybody. It's just, you got to go figure it out, you know, and it might not be overnight. You know, mine's been fairly quick.
For sure.
You know, quicker than, you know, probably anybody else ever in the whole world.
World, literally.
But,
And you turned down a couple big gigs too. If not, you'd be like astronomically big in a year. Like,
yeah, dude,
one of the fastest ever.
I turned down some huge shit because I don't want to get vaccinated. So I don't believe in the vaccination. I don't believe it's for me. And I'm not saying it's not for you.
Yeah.
If it's for you, go get it.
I'm with that.
If you think that vaccination is going to help you and your family and it's going to protect you, then go get it.
Yeah. All my family got vaccinated. I didn't. I don't care.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's not for me. I think I've had it already. I think I got through it. I think, you know, you asked me about the vaccination, not to get into it too much, but basically it's just like, if you get this vaccination, can you still get COVID? Yes. Can you still pass it? Yes. Can you still die? Yes. Can that shot itself kill you maybe? Yeah, it can. So for me, it doesn't make any sense.
When my time comes, right.
I'm 43 years old. I'm healthy. You know, I've got, you know, a million burpees under my belt. I think I can, I think I'm okay with the vaccine. I'm not getting the vaccine. But it's free. If it's for you, go get it.
Absolutely.
But don't force me to take it and take something away that I've earned because I won't get it. And that's what they've done to me.
Yeah.
You know, I could have sang the national anthem at the Cardinals game on Christmas Day, national TV, in front of millions of viewers, right? That was on the table for me.
Yeah.
If you get vaccinated, I won't do it. You know, I just won't do it. iHeart Music Awards, you know, I earned that. I earned the right to go sing at the iHeart Music Awards on national television in front of 2 million viewers there too in Vegas. But in Vegas, guess what? You got to go do that. You got to get vaccinated. I don't believe in it. Everything I've ever told anybody about my songs and the things that I believe in, I'd be a sellout to go take those paychecks to sing a song, you know, so I'm going to keep singing my songs and sing them until the right situation comes along, and it will. And you're not gonna, I'm not gonna, you know, do something I don't believe in for a couple paychecks. Although those paychecks would come in really, really handy in my situation right now.
For sure. But I'm a firm believer too. Like, as long as you're true to who you are as a person, which clearly you are, you know, the big stuff's just gonna keep coming, and that's all that's gonna do is build more to your brand or your value that you are true, you know, and you didn't fold for money, you know, and
yeah.
How much cool it would be. So say hypothetically, we'll just use your situation as an example. Like say within 5 years from now, if you just took all the money and went for that fame, you could be worth $10 million in 5 years, but you're not helping anybody and you're just a shitty person, but you're worth a ton of money, yeah. You know, like all those,
there's plenty of those people,
half
out
of
there.
Those fake people out there in the world, you know, or you could do your path and maybe say in 5 years you're worth $1 million, but you've helped a ton of people on the way. You're coaching your kids still, you have nothing but good relationships, and the entire way you're inspiring people and helping people. How much more fulfilling of a life is that? Because, you know, just like I said, money doesn't make you happy. You know, like the more money I made, the more empty I felt. You know what I mean? The more gratitude I get and the more gratefulness I get and purpose in life is the more I help people, you know? And it's just like, because it takes you out of yourself. When you're helping someone, you don't think of what you're going through yourself.
I agree with that. But to be, but just keeping it 100% real, always. Cash flow is important.
For sure.
Cash flow is important.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to do what you're doing and to be able to drive to Vegas and be able to do these shows, cash flow is important. So
money,
it doesn't make you happy, but in order for you to keep making other people happy and doing what you love to do, you're going to have some cash flow.
Well, that's
so
what he said.
You having have. Cash flow is like, for me, I'm not going to say it doesn't make me happy because I enjoy having money.
Yeah.
And I enjoy, you know, but it just shows you also that I turned down two huge paychecks that I need right now in my life, you know, in the early stages of my career that I'm in. I turned them down. But, and I think for you too, I think as long as you got cash flow, man, and you've got enough money to put gas in your truck and to pay your bills and take care of your family, as long as you're helping people, I think, you know, like whether you got 10,000 in the bank or 10 million, as long as you're able to do what you're doing today, I think that's I think you're good, right?
Yeah, and as long as I still have enough money to go help people, because that was a trip I paid for by myself, you know? And like,
Black
and
Angus?
Yeah.
Hey, Black Angus, where you at? Roll call with Choppy, give us some gift cards.
Seriously.
Give some gift cards, Black Angus, and go feed some people.
Seriously, and I haven't, and I still haven't made a dollar in 6 months, but as long as I have enough money to pay my mortgage and have my bills, like, I know it's going to come, like, whoever, something, this whole mission that's way, way bigger than me
and
is going to write my paycheck.
And I think sponsorships will come, and that's crazy right there, Black Angus, but... Dude, why not?
Yeah.
Hey, Black Angus, give us $1,000 worth of gift cards and just we'll go feed people and we'll record it.
Seriously.
Like, that's how easy it is. You've got, let's give us some gift cards, right?
Yeah.
And let me and Chappie go just feed some people. With
help
them.
People.
Send us some Black Angus gift cards.
And that's how Black Angus would start building a legacy, you know? It's like, it's literally what it's about.
Let's
it's
start
your legacy because we're all going to die.
Feeding people, man, and putting it on the show. Like, just grabbing people who are hungry. Like, how sad is that, man, for somebody to be hungry? Like, it's a sad, it's fucking sad. Like, and there are people out there, man, that are hungry. Let's feed them. You know, how simple is that? I try to, like, people on the side of the roads, and I hope sometimes that, like, hey, check it out, man. If you're going to go get drunk with my money, cool. At least I got you drunk tonight. I'm also okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get drunk and forget about your problems tonight, man, here's that. But I hope you go eat. And, dude, I can't tell you how much money me and my wife spend and my daughter, like, just giving money away on the side of the streets. And we don't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But, dude, I tell you what, if I hear all these, like, athletes and movie stars crying about helping this person and this and this bullshit, dude, you go help them then.
Yeah,
you've got million. You're worth million. Like, dude, I could get into some of these professional athletes and shit, dude, who are worth so much money, who are crying about all the different. Dude, just go give some of your money away.
Yeah,
you've got plenty, dude. If I had $10 million, you know how many people I would help with that?
Oh,
like tons, dude. And there's so many people that need the help, and so I get pissed off about some of that because all these people who got it made are crying about shit all the time, and they don't fucking know nothing about struggle.
Yeah, let me tell you two real quick stories of going back to that OG that I was out with in LA, just to show you like how much we can all learn from this stuff. So he even made a hypothetical analogy, and he said, because I was like telling him how he didn't care about anything. So I went out there to bring him all those clothes, right? And at the very end, he doesn't even take the clothes, you know? And then he tells me he has all the stuff at Goodwill, and he just wants to help people. And he's like, and he makes a comment. He goes, if I want $1 million tomorrow, he goes, I'd probably just give it all to Sister Mary. I'm like, what? Who thinks that? I mean, this dude's 60 days out, you know, but it's like when you get out of self and just help people, it's like, how selfish are we out here? You know, I mean, I'm like, there's so many things that this public can learn from these people. And which is why I think that Sister Mary Foundation is like the greatest thing I've ever witnessed and been a part of. And anybody that wants to look it up, Google it. It is insane. You're going to come back with me one of these next times. I have
concert,
to bring you there,
man. Let's do it. Let's
I
do a
told
concert.
I wanted to do a concert with you. I was going to try
to do a concert
it.
And get some of these other foundations that I'm teamed up with, you know, get them all together, and we'll do a, you know, we can do a big fundraiser for a bunch of different people. Maybe Mark Chestnut will get involved. We can get him on the ticket. And you know, Carrie is like one of the best human beings alive. Carrie Lake, I'm telling you, if you listen to this thing, man, and you just want to vote somebody that's just got a big old heart, dude. That she'll show up, dude, just so we can raise money for that foundation.
Just use a name.
So there's people. Let's do a concert, man. Let's do a concert and do some music, and let's throw all the money at Sister Mary. I mean, I'm down for that. For
I
sure.
love it.
And it gives me an opportunity to go to California for a
absolutely,
little bit.
Absolutely, for sure.
I don't want to live there, but I'll visit.
yeah. And every time I'm there, I'm heading back. I'm like, why did I go there again? You know, but you have to.
And all you Californians, yeah, go ahead and stay where you're at, too. Arizona's closed. We're building a border at Blythe.
Yeah, at Blythe, yeah.
Colorado River.
Yeah.
Swim across if you want to come.
Yeah. So I want to say, do you have any typical like last advice you could give to people? Because a lot of people do look up to you, you know, as a person you are from, even if it's not from the prison, just the fact that you're a country music star up and coming. I mean,
right there in itself is like, you know, I go sometimes and like I sign autographs and like I do some of this stuff. And like, you know, I hosted a Carrie Lake event, and like, I don't see it though. I don't feel like a star. I don't feel like anybody. I don't know if I ever will. And I still run around sometimes, people notice me or know who I am in some random ass places. You know, I had a senator the other night who came up and told me, he's like, dude, my mom has been blowing up my phone the whole night because you're here.
No way.
Yeah, Senator Josh something. Anyways, he comes up to me after the event. He's like, dude, he's like, I didn't know who you were before tonight. He's like, but my mom's texted me 7 times because she loves your music. So I don't think I'm a star, and I don't think I'll ever be one. I sing country music, man. I write and sing country music. And along the way, if I can get the world listening to my music, that's my goal. And if I could, you know, take care of my family be a good husband, be a good father, be somebody that somebody wants to be like, and just people know that my heart's in the right place, and that I'm a man of God. That's enough for me, man. So I'd say my advice is just chase your dreams with, throw caution to the wind. Give it everything you got. Don't have a backup plan. And that's probably maybe bad advice, but don't have one. Don't have a backup plan. Go all in for what you love, because you don't know when your time's up. And you don't want to leave any what-ifs at the table. If it doesn't work, figure something else out. But just throw caution to the wind, man. Dive in. And you know, and love life, and try to live it to your fullest.
That's, like the burning the bridges saying, and that's what Andy Frisell says. He goes, "You fucking, your plan B is fucking losing, and there's no plan B."
I don't have a backup plan. I still don't have one. I still get scared sometimes, thinking, you know, if it doesn't work, even though it's working, I still have these things in my head. What if it falls off? What am I? I don't have a backup plan, and I think the best plan in life when you're doing something is to not have a backup plan, because if you have something to fall back on, it's easier.
You're never
going to
put all of it into the one thing. Yeah, exactly.
Right? So, yeah, don't have a backup plan and just fucking chase it like, you know, like today's your last day on earth.
And that's what I use a lot of here too, is like the days I want to get lazy or I want to sleep in, you know, I just try to remember, put myself right back to those times I was in that cell, and I would just like look out those bars and I'd just be think, what would I give to be out of here so I could do something, you know, I could mow the lawn. Like, and that's the thing, you'd find gratitude mowing the lawn when you're in there, you know, and then a lot of people get out here and they
raking
forget
your dirt.
Anything.
Don't walk on it either. Don't walk on these lines.
Absolutely. So that's what helps me get through. When I want to be lazy, I just try to put myself right back to that time, because
don't walk on these lines.
It puts into real perspective for you too. So,
yeah.
Thank you for being here, dude. You are the man. A lot of people can learn a lot from you. I am, like I said, honored to consider you a true friend now, you know, and
I love you. I love you, bro. I love you, man. You're my friend, and I'm proud of you. And like I said, man, I think that what you're doing is about as good as a human heart can do. And I won't lie, either in the very beginning, I was like, what the fuck is this dude? And what's his deal? What's his angle? You know? Because I'm cautious of people in the beginning, and I'll be honest with you, I thought that in the beginning, like, what's this dude's angle? Like, he's like almost being, you know, too fucking awesome.
I love that.
And I was, dude. I was like, and like even Brandy had asked me, she's like, what's up with Peter? I was like, I think he's a great guy. I still don't, you know, like I'm still, because you're doing so many great things. But over time now, I know, dude, your heart is just, it's in the right spot, and I'm proud to call you a friend. So,
dude, that means the world here. Yeah, you know, I look up to Brandy a lot too. So, yeah.
But so I think it's great, man. Just keep pushing.
For sure. Awesome. I love you, buddy. Thank you for being here. And I will have you back once.
Love you, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast and leave us some feedback. We would love to know what you think. You can find everything discussed in this episode and more in our show notes below or petermeyerhoff.com. I am Peter Meyerhoff, and you've been listening to the Roll Call with Chappie podcast.